At once they left their nets and followed him. When he had gone a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat, preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. This is the reading of the Lord. Thank you.
Amen. So yeah, from last week to this week, we're going from the end. As if you were here last week, Pete preached on the Great Commission, the last things that Jesus would really say to his disciples, the commission to go and make disciples of all nations. And so this week, we're going back to the beginning. Going back to the beginning, the calling of those disciples. And there's a reason for that. It's because of what happened this time last year. Now, those of you who were here last year will know. Those of you who weren't here last year, I'll fill you in. So this time last year, well, beginning of September last year, we started a series around a book called Holy Habits. Remember that? Yeah. Seems like a while ago. We spent 3 months working through some of these ideas about from a book by Andrew Roberts that were habits, the habits of the early disciples, as accounted for in Acts chapter 2. And it's a very few verses, but there's a huge amount of things that we can pull out of those verses in terms of what they did, what were the practices of the early disciples that then we could read. It says, and day by day their numbers increased. So what were those practices is something we searched around with the encouragement that it wasn't just a case of we would spend 3 months doing that and then we would move on to something else. So the house groups, the life groups, for example, explored those a little bit more throughout the year. And in fact, some life groups are going back to it as well, I know. We sunk ourselves into discipleship and some habits of good discipleship. Just in case you'd forgotten, this is what they were: biblical teaching, fellowship, breaking of bread, prayer, giving, service, eating together, gladness and generosity, worship, and making more disciples. Now, if you remember rightly, or if you remember at all, we talked about the fact that actually these weren't just kind of one-off things, but there's a very specific reason why the book is called Holy Habits. A habit is something you do again and again and again. A habit is also something you do almost without thinking about it. You have a look at Abby. I can say that because she's not here. And when she's tired or upset, what does she do? Puts her fingers in her mouth. And she doesn't even think about it. She doesn't even think about it because it is a habit. Who still bites their nails? I bite my nails when I'm bored, okay? So you can always tell if I've been bored or if I've got nothing to do. The worst thing for me was being in college lectures. It's not because I was always bored, but because I'd had nothing to do or I was writing or I'd just be listening or something, I'd end up biting my nails. It's a habit, something we don't think about. Now, there are good habits and bad habits, but habits are things that we just continually do. So, dare I ask the question? I wonder how many of those things that I just listed have become habits. Now, for some of us it's taken a year, but we've committed to reading our Bible daily. That's a good habit to get into. Sometimes, like yesterday, I did not do my Bible reading yesterday, so I've got 2 days to do today. I don't know how I'm going to fit it in, so I might have 3 days to do tomorrow, but we'll get there. But I've committed to do it, so I'm going to do it. And if it means 1 week I do nothing for a week and then I have a whole heap to do in 1 day, then that's my problem. But some of us have committed to doing that. Some of us are already doing that, I am sure, and that's wonderful and brilliant. But committing to the daily reading of scriptures. I know that people have shared in meals together, and not just when we said, right, we're doing eating together. So we kind of went into each other's homes and shared meals together. But I know that people have continued to invite people around to eat together. Life groups have shared meals with other life groups. It's been wonderful. Do we have to consciously think about that, or are we still doing it? We've been into our community over the summer and we've done some acts of service. We've been doing litter picks. That's wonderful. We've served we've done the 10K. That's an act of service. We've served at the Festival of Transport. That's an act of service. There are various things that we've done as a whole church. I wonder if there are things that you've done yourselves. We've established a monthly prayer meeting, first Sunday of every month. We meet together on a Sunday evening to pray together. A few of us. No hints. But maybe you've established a better prayer pattern for your own life. Giving. You'll have to ask Gail about that one, because I don't get involved in those things, apart from just stand at the front and talk about it sometimes. Giving. I wonder how our giving has changed. In what ways we give? It's not just always financially. We need the financial, obviously, to sustain the work that we do. But actually, where are the levels? What are the levels of what are the giving have we done? What about making more disciples? Anyone want to say that they've done that this year? Well, we baptized a good number of people, but have we made new Christians as a church, or have we helped people on their journey? I suspect that actually lots of us have done that bit, and that is a really important bit and actually can never be understated. That those God conversations that we may have had with people, supporting them and helping them to take another step on their faith journey, whether they understand that to be the case or not. Now, what I'm not going to do is stand here and make you feel guilty, because that is not my job as a minister, as a preacher. Sometimes it is, okay, but mostly I don't want to stand here and pass judgment and make you feel guilty on the successes or failures. Didn't really want to use the word failures, but the successes and not so successes of whether we've engaged in the holy habits. Because what I want to do this morning, instead of kind of going, now, have you done your homework, is say that it wasn't just homework that needed completing. Those 3 months, it would have been very, very easy for us to kind of go, right, we've done it, we did that, and we got round to the service bit eventually. It was fine, it didn't matter that it took a bit of time, but we did it, last box ticked, excellent. Right, what are we doing now? Because that is not how discipleship works. Discipleship is not, never has been and never will be, a tick box exercise. Last year I preached, I went back and checked so I know, last year I preached on the first Sunday in September about discipleship, and it's in the book, it's part of the first chapter of the book, about discipleship being an adventure. I was privileged to go to the wedding blessing of some friends of ours that had made a couple that had got together while we were up on the Wirral in one of my churches, and it was brilliant because they had a very blessed wedding blessing in the fact that Anthony Clues led the worship because he'd been their minister before I was. I did the prayers, and a friend of theirs who's now a Baptist pastor in Liverpool led the service and preached. I was like, well, you know, you've gone super holy. But one of the things that we were kind of doing the prayers as a family, which was it was just lovely to do that. Was I found a prayer written as a wedding blessing prayer, a woman called Marianne Williamson. Now, some of you will be like, oh, yes, I know that name. And some of you won't have a clue. Marianne Williamson wrote the book from which the quote, you know, the whole quote about our greatest, I knew I should have written it down. Our greatest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our greatest fear is that we have power beyond measure. That one, the one that's attributed to Nelson Mandela. I'll post it on Facebook or something later. But she wrote some prayers which we used some of, and it talked in there, and it was something that I absolutely adored. It talked about marriage as a holy adventure. I love that. Marriage as a holy adventure. You know, if marriage were a tick box exercise, then I suspect there would be less divorce in the world. Because we could go, oh, tick, done that, tick, done that, tick, done that, that's fine. If that's all that marriage were about, then actually people would often have very little reason to separate. But it's not. What is marriage about? Marriage is an adventure birthed in relationship. That's when things struggle in marriage, isn't it? When that relationship, the adventure stops, or the adventure falls down, or the adventure goes in two different directions. When the relationship itself breaks down, and that is exactly what I want to say about discipleship. You see, discipleship is equally a holy adventure. If our discipleship were a tick box exercise, then having completed the course, i.e. we did the 3 months, we've done all the stuff, relayed the practical side of it, and we've finished it, we've done holy habits, then actually we would be able to sit back, relax, and then wait for our heavenly rewards. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be really nice if that were the Christian life? Then we'd just kind of go, right, done that, tick, done that, tick, done that, tick. Excellent. Getting to heaven now. Brilliant. Just waiting. But we know, we all know, that that is not how it works. See, discipleship is not a tick box exercise. Discipleship is an adventure. And it's not even an adventure that we have an earthly destination for. It's an adventure that is only complete when we meet face to face with our Father in heaven. That's when the adventure ends, and maybe it's a new adventure beginning. You see, discipleship is an adventure that it continues. Last week, Pete reminded us of that tiny yet very significant and powerful word. Two letters. Go. It's really scary. It's really scary, and to be fair, that is what discipleship is about. It's about the go, but what begins that? We need to remember that discipleship begins with another short word. Come. Discipleship begins with the word come. It's how Jesus began. Come. That's what he said to his disciples. Come. Now, I think, as I was reading the passage that we've just heard from Mark's Gospel and those all of the narratives about Jesus calling his first disciples, is that I get stuck at some point because he says, come, follow me. And that's where I've always stopped at that point. Come, follow me. Great. Impressive. Wonderful. I could preach several sermons on come, follow me and what that means. But actually, what comes next? What comes next is, and I will show you. And I will show you. You see, Jesus has a great model of discipleship, a great model of leadership, really, a great model of training. Because what Jesus does as you read through the gospel, he says, come, and I'm going to show you. So he gets the disciples around and he performs a miracle, or he teaches, or he does whatever. Come and I will show you. So they see. They see him doing. Then he says, come and I will do it with you. So the feeding of the 5,000, what does he do? He says, come, gather round right now. You go and do that bit. You go and find a food. I'll do the miracle bit. You find the food. You dish it out. Come, I will show you. Come, I will do with you. And then he says, right, now you go to that village and then come back and tell me. You go off on your own for a bit. I'll watch from afar. You go and do that, but I'm still here. And then at last, with a great commission, Jesus says to them, go, I send you. I show you, I'll do it with you, I'll watch you, and then I'll send you. You see, the Great Commission that we spoke of, Pete spoke about last week, hasn't come from nowhere. It hasn't come out of the blue, hasn't come out of a place where the disciples are sort of going, oh my goodness, you haven't given us anything to start with. You see, discipleship is about the learning as well as the doing. And that's what we do on a Sunday morning, and that's what we do in our devotionals. But actually, what do we do? How much of a percentage of the week is that? Very little. We do some learning, then we go and do. That is what discipleship is about. We learn in church, we learn in our small groups, we learn in our own time with God, whether that's reading scripture or in prayer, or reading books that are just helping us in our Christian journey. Maybe it's even the time we spend chatting about our faith with a friend over coffee. Reflecting. We do all of that learning. This all means that we cannot forget about those holy habits, because I'm afraid no t-shirt comes with the end of holy habits. You don't get a holy habits, I did it, t-shirt at the end of it. I'm really sorry if you were hoping for a freebie. It's not what happens. It is not a been there, done that, got the t-shirt. But it is really that actually we just need constant reminder of those habits. And so that's what I'm doing today. I'm reminding myself of those holy habits that we need to establish and keep establishing and keep establishing and keep establishing. Actually, I'm here to maybe suggest that we might even pick up our holy habits books again and just have a reread and kind of go, okay, oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that. I need to start that, doing that again. Or, oh yeah, I never did that and I wish that I had. Right, I'll start now. To ask ourselves, what did we do that we've stopped doing? What did I never really make a go of? But also, because actually we could just end up feeling really guilty if we did that. And there's no point in guilt. Jesus has done away with guilt. Don't need guilt in our lives at all. But rather to kind of go, actually, if I think back to last year and who I was last year, how am I different now than I was last year? How is my faith different this year, now, today, than it was last year? And for some of us, we'll be able to go, do you know what? Actually, I hadn't even noticed that those holy habits had an impact, or actually something else in terms of discipleship. The holy habits were only aimed to be an encouragement, not a be-all and end-all. It's not a case of, like I said, it's not a tick-box exercise. It's not a case of, done all that, let's move on, you know, then we've done it. There is still more. So celebrate. What is it that has become a habit? What is it that has changed in our lives for the better? What has brought us closer to God? How am I more Christ-like today? So where are you on your discipleship journey? Are you the same person today as you were last year? What has God done in you in the past year? How are you following Christ closer today? How are you imitating Christ more today? But what we don't want to do is sit on our laurels and congratulate ourselves either. Yes, brilliant, celebrate it. Go, I'm really pleased that I am not who I was last year. Or I'm really pleased that I am more because of following Jesus. But actually, we push ourselves on. Discipleship is an adventure. And you ask a great adventurer. I suspect that if I spoke to someone like Ranulph Fiennes and said, so, you made it to the top of Everest. Is that it now? I don't suppose he'd go, oh yeah, I've done that. I'm just going to go home and watch telly now. I imagine that he would turn around and go, no, I'm just looking for the next adventure. What is the next challenge, the next step of adventure? One of the things that I'm hoping to introduce, I was hoping to do it today, but it was a bit too short notice in my head to sort it out. But the Three Generate, which is what a good number of our young people are going to in November, at the end of November, which we've asked for sponsorship for them to do that. One of the things that came out of last year's Three Generate was an encouragement to have a year of testimony, to encourage churches, and churches to be the kind of starting point of that, to remind ourselves that actually when we share our stories, actually when we share it with friends in church, it helps us to share them outside of church as well. And so I'm hoping, if I can get my head around it, that we might have more testimony. And not, this is how I became a Christian kind of testimony, but, well, you never guess what, this week, God did this. So if something happens in your life and you go, actually, that was definitely a God moment. I don't need a whole 3-page essay. I need 2 minutes. Come and tell us. And do you know what? Sometimes it's, I went for a walk and I sat down and everything in my view just was perfect. You know, you have those moments when the sun's in the right place, the light catches something, and you just knew God. You knew that God was there. It's a good testimony. When God puts you in a place where you're able to help somebody, or you've prayed for something and a prayer comes true, whatever comes to fruition, whatever that looks like, that's good testimony. And we want to hear those week on week. You don't need to hear me speaking every week. It's boring after a while, I know. But we want to hear stories of how good God is. I'm going to finish in a moment now with a prayer that is used in the again at the beginning of the book, which I think I remember recalling thinking, oh, I'm going to use it, and then I didn't use it, and it feels right now to use it a year on. And it's one of those prayers that we've no idea where it comes from, but it's been attributed to someone famous because that's easy. So it's a prayer attributed to Sir Francis Drake, or a prayer that he prayed, whether he wrote it or not. So, I'm going to pray, and then we're just going to have a moment's silence before we worship together. Actually, where are you at? Where do you want to be? What's just kind of asking those questions that I've just asked. How am I more like Jesus than I was last year? How am I following Jesus closer than I was last year? How do I want to follow Jesus? What needs to change, if anything? So let's pray. Disturb us, Lord, when we are too pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true because we dreamed too little, when we arrived safely because we sailed too close to the shore. Disturb us, Lord, when with the abundance of things that we possess, we have lost our thirst for the waters of life. Having fallen in love with life, we have ceased to dream of eternity, and in our efforts to build a new earth, we have allowed our vision of the new heaven to dim. Disturb us, Lord, to dare more boldly, to venture on wilder seas, where storms will show your mastery, where losing sight of land, we shall find the stars. We ask you to push back the horizons of our hopes and push back the future in strength, courage, hope, and love.